magnitude, and it was centered about 190 miles west of the town of Bandon, 4.5 hours southwest of Portland. After weeks of searching, 20-year-old Molly Tippett's body was found yesterday. They believe the Iowa college student was killed by a 24-year-old illegal immigrant. President Trump raised the story during a West Virginia rally last night.
You heard about today with the illegal alien coming in, very sadly, from Mexico, and you saw what happened to that incredible, beautiful young woman. Should have never happened illegally in our country. We've had a huge impact, but the laws are so bad. The immigration laws are such a disgrace. We're getting them changed, but we have to get more Republicans.
This is USA Radio News.
Everyone loves liberty, so why are you letting other people tell you what's best for your health care? Exercise your freedom with Liberty Health Share. Liberty Health Share is a community of people who voluntarily share one another's medical costs. Members are able to take back the freedom to make their own decisions about their health care. Stop letting others tell you what to do. Call us at 855-58-LIBERTY for more information, or check us out online at libertyhealthshare.org. That's libertyhealthshare.org.
More women than ever are running for office, and most Americans think it's great, according to the new Pew Research survey. Overall, just over 60% of the adults surveyed said they think it's a good thing. Women were more excited about it than men, though. 68% of women said they're happy about it. 51% of the men were happy about it. Republicans not as thrilled. 45% of Republican women said more women running is a good thing. And just 34% of Republican men thought so. And a quarter of conservatives say they'd like to see a female president in their lifetime, but the other three quarters couldn't care less. In Colorado, Christopher Watts will be staying in jail without bond after being formally charged yesterday for the murders of his pregnant wife and their two young daughters.
At this point, I have denied your right to bail.
Prosecutors say Watts murdered Shannon Watts and their daughters, 4-year-old Bella and 3-year-old Celeste, last week in their home in Frederick, Colorado. However, Watts claims he killed his wife in a rage after she murdered the two girls. And the package that Barnum's Animals Animal Crackers from Nabisco come in have long shown animals in cages. However, PETA has won a campaign to get Nabisco to change it. The animals are no longer in cages. They're just kind of standing around. And for USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
Good morning. You're listening to Happy to Help. This is Nicole Smith, and we are going to do the weather. It's sunny today, and let's see. Sorry, I'm pulling it up now. All right. Sunny, partly sunny and 75 today, some thunderstorms tonight, Thursday sunny, Friday sunny, Saturday sunny, mostly sunny Sunday, so we have a lot of sun this week, so get out and enjoy it. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Jeannie Murphy, host of Talented People Radio, produced by Mariah Media. Our show is fun, and we specialize on interviewing some of the most awesome people from around the world. Tune in and watch our live stream on Facebook, and don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel so that you can watch past episodes. Talented People airs every Wednesday from 3 to 4 p.m. Join us for some fun.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
Good morning. This is Nicole Smith, and you're listening to Happy to Help. And today we welcome Diane Lang. She's positive psychology educator and coach. And I met her through a couple different workshops that I attended. So welcome, Diane.
Thank you so much for having me. I really am really enjoying being here, especially that you said we're going to have sun all week. So now I'm really happy.
I know, right? Sun, here we go, sun, especially at the last few days of summer. So we need to enjoy it. So, well, this show, Happy to Help, is all about being happy, fostering happiness, and my whole take on it is becoming happy or being happy through helping others and having a sense of purpose. And a lot of the work that you do in positive psychology pertains to all that. So can you give us just a quick background of how you got into counseling? And you're also an adjunct professor at Montclair State, and about the class that you teach there and how you foster positive psychology in your work.
Sure. So I've been a therapist and a life coach for about 20 years now, doing it for a very long time. When I went to graduate school in the late 90s, I went for a counseling psychology degree, but the program I went to was a humanistic program. And humanistic is really the foundation of positive psychology. It was one of the first sciences that really dealt with living your potential, being your best self. And everybody pretty much remembers, when you think of humanistic, Abraham Maslow, like that hierarchy of needs, that pyramid, because I think we had to take it in like Psych 101, Business 101. And it was all about reaching, you know, your full potential. And what positive psychology does is it gives us the tips and tools to really live our best selves, to be our happiest, most resilient, to be optimistic. And it's a great science because it studies the other side. It studies, you know, happiness, resiliency, meaning in life, using our strengths. So it really is such a great science. And it was coined in 1998 by Martin Seligman, who at the time was the president of American Psychological Association. And he now runs the grad school at UPenn. And he just really brought the science to life. And I'm just really excited that I get to be part of it. So at Montclair State, I've been there about 10 years as an adjunct, and I teach what's called psychology of adjustment, which is a really great class because it's really about dealing with the everyday issues. It's, you know, adjusting to life. So stress, transition, anxiety, you know, all change, all the things we normally deal with. And the class really is a humanistic positive psychology science class. So the students can come in and deal with the issues they're dealing with, right? Because students nowadays, you know, really, you know, we call it the quarter life crisis. But the truth is, there's so much stress, you know, just getting into college, paying for college, having to work full time while paying student loans, being able to get a job. It's so much harder nowadays. Mm-hmm. So really having a class that lets them deal with what they're dealing with on an everyday basis, I think is really great because it hits really, you know, hits home. So I try to really help as many people between my workshops and seminars where we met, teaching at college and my books. I'm just hoping to really give out all the tips and tools that can cultivate more happiness and mindfulness in people's lives so they can be their best and reduce stress, which are probably one of the two main components in life, right? We always want to reduce stress and we want to be our best. So I'm hoping to help as many people as I can, just the way you are.
Absolutely. Well, that's incredible. And it's something that we have to work on our entire life, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's not like you just, you know, check a box and you're okay, now I'm happy, I'm done. It's a procedure or a process and an ongoing process, because I think you've talked about managing that inner dialogue, because that's our biggest enemy, right?
Yeah.
You're probably familiar with Brian Tracy, mm-hmm. and I used to listen to his tapes, and he always says that, you know, your mind is like a garden, and in a garden, the weeds grow. You know, they don't need any sun or rain or
right.
anything. They just grow, and that's what you have to constant, and then that's what happens with negative thoughts in your mind. They just grow, and it's up to you to pull those weeds and mitigate that, those feelings and those thoughts. And so wouldn't you agree, or isn't that something you teach about inner dialogue?
You know what? We all have an inner dialogue, and most of us live in subconscious. You know, we're on autopilot. We just go through life every day, just doing our normal routine, what we're used to. We don't stop and think. And if we really did pay attention to that inner dialogue, to all those inner thoughts we have, the clutter that's in our brain, we'd really become so self-aware of what we really think. And the best time to do that is at night. You know, like during the day, we're so busy. We're so filled with activities, work, kids. You know, we're just so preoccupied that we don't think about it. But right before we go to bed, you know, you've said goodnight to everybody, shut the light off, you shut the TV off, you go to sit down in bed, and that's when all of those thoughts come up. You know, I should have done this, I could have done that, why did I say that, what's wrong with me? You know, whatever your inner dialogue is, everybody's is different because it really depends on your past, your childhood, what you've been through, how you've coped. So we all have a different one, but if you're not aware of what it is, that's really the first key, because so many of us have so much negativity. We call it the negative bias. You know, we're so negative in today's society. All you have to do is put on the news. Well, actually, I don't want everybody to put on so much news. We don't want to be inundated with news.
Right.
You know, I know everybody wants to know what's going on, but once a day is plenty. You know, we
yeah.
don't need to hear it 24 hours
right.
a day, you know, and read it on our computers, our magazines, our newspapers, everything. So we're so inundated with it that between the negativity of society, that every advertisement, every ad that we see is always telling us we're not good enough. You know, color your hair. You shouldn't get gray. Use this moisturizer. You're getting too old. Don't get the Toyota. Get the Lexus. You know, we're always told that everything is not good enough. So really, it's so hard to compete. So for us, we have to really pay attention and be conscious, be in the present moment and really pay attention to our thoughts. So if everybody right before they went to sleep just really concentrated on what comes up, or another way to think of it is, next time that you're angry or hurt or sad or something, you know, really comes up that makes you kind of, you know, go into an emotional state, that's when you'll hear the same things. You know, I should have done this. I'm such an idiot. Why did I say that? Nobody cares. You know, whatever your inner dialogue is. And I have a lot of clients tell me when they're driving, when they kind of zone out a little bit, that that's when all their thoughts come up. Mm. But start really paying attention to what they are, because you can't challenge them until you know what your thoughts are. Mm-hmm. But that inner dialogue could keep us really negative. It could keep us unhappy. It could keep us feeling that we're not good enough, not lovable. So yeah, it's really important, as Brian Tracy would say, or any of us in this field, you know, really pay attention to the inner dialogue, or I call it clutter, because that's what it is. Mm-hmm. It's just so much of that clutter. And so much of that clutter, that inner dialogue, is so old or outdated or not true, not realistic. It's just been there for so long that we don't even pay attention to it. We just, you know, we keep going on autopilot. So it's kind of waking up to our thoughts, which is a mindfulness technique, you know, really being awake to not just what's around us, but really what's going on in our head. So we have the ability to become aware of it and change it and challenge it, which we really do have the ability to do, which is wonderful. Because when I first started counseling 20 years ago, I'd have clients come in and be like, I'm not going to change. I'm a victim of my DNA. Blame my parents. It's all genetic. And we know that's not true. You have a lot of control over what you think, your habits, your patterns, and your beliefs. So everybody who's listening who thinks, oh, I can't change, you absolutely can. It's just starting with that self-awareness technique.
Right. And don't you have some statistics where it's 40% is nurture and something? I mean, I don't know if you have those at your fingertips right now, but yeah, so we can change, right?
Right. So when you think about your personality as a whole, you know, 100%, we know that 50% of who you are is nature, which is genetic. That you can blame your parents for, you know, it's what we were born with. Okay, great. Then you have 10% of who you are, which is circumstances. And we have no control over our circumstances. You know, it could be anything from getting into a car accident to an injury or an illness, loss of a loved one, company going out of business, you know, whatever is going on, circumstantial. So altogether, that's 60%. But 40% that we call nurtured is your learned environment. And that 40%, you're in complete control. And being that part of your personality is learned, it was your environment, you can change it. And most of your belief systems are just thoughts you heard over and over again, especially going back to childhood mm-hmm. and, you know, the people you were around the most.
Yep.
And then you just kept repeating them in your head and they became a belief system. So they don't even have to be true. You know, I've had clients who, including myself, you know, most therapists, we become therapists because something has happened, right? You know, we're screwed up on our own, so we want to change the world and we come in. So, you know, if you grew up in a, you know, a family or an environment like I did where I constantly heard you're stupid since you were, you know, a very young child, it became what you believed, even if your IQ score was different, even mm-hmm. if your SAT and your, you know, your GRE scores were all completely different, you would still believe it just because it's what you constantly heard. And after you hear something frequently, daily, for weeks and months, it becomes a belief system mm-hmm. to you. Mm-hmm. So that's why I say, you know, when you become self-aware of your beliefs, really start thinking and challenging them. Is this true? Is it based on fact? That's really an important question. Is it a realistic belief? Is it a belief that was somebody else's and it came from an unreliable source because maybe your boss was unhappy, your husband, your wife, your parents, or they were abused and they're just following the cycle? Or is it old and, you know, it's an outdated belief? Like, I have a client who lost a lot of weight, over 150 pounds.
Wow.
Looks fabulous, really happy about that. But her belief system is that she's still overweight. Mm. Even though she's, you know, down five sizes, she looks great. Mm-hmm. She doesn't feel it emotionally. Mm. So she still has that belief system that she's overweight, that she's ugly, unattractive. And even though physically she's changed, she hasn't connected to it. So the belief system is just so old and outdated. It's not even who she is for the last over 5 years. So we really have to, you know, challenge those belief systems to make the changes, but you have the ability to, and now you know, you have 40% control, and that's pretty much a good amount when I think about it. 40% is not bad. We can do a lot with that.
Yeah, and use it, and use it well.
Yes.
This is incredible and very insightful, and we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back.
Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterdon. You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
This is Tony Clark, para planner at Patton Heide & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heide & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heide & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
And we're back. This is Nicole Smith, and you're listening to Happy to Help. And today, our guest is Diane Lang. If you want to look up her website, it's dlcounseling.com. And she's got all kinds of, she's got her bio on there. She's got workshops and all kinds of stuff that you can check out, where she is, what she's doing, what workshops she's presenting. A couple of the workshops that I wanted to go over was you talked about the kids that you teach at Montclair State, or the quarter life. What do you call it?
Yes, that's the new crisis. It's called quarter life crisis, right. And it's really between the ages of about 19 and about 28, 29. And it's really because there's such a big change. Like, I still remember when I went to graduate school. I graduated in 98. Boy, I feel old just saying that. But, you know, only like 5 or 6% of the United States was going for a master's degree back then. The competition wasn't as strict. So now just trying to get into a college or get into graduate school, and you really need graduate school now to get a job. And then when they graduate, I have a client right now who just finished graduate school, and she is in debt over $106,000.
Yeah, how do you ever, tough, yeah.
Right, how do you ever pay that back? And then we wonder why we have boomerang kids who go away to college and come back. They just can't afford it between the debt, trying to find a job. And the normal job today, when you go out to find a job with a four-year degree, it's about $32,000. So just think about that. If you owe, you know, anywhere from $50,000 to $100,000, then you're making about $32,000 or $35,000. Take away taxes, you can't even afford it. So it's a really tough time. And there's just, you know, when I graduated grad school, I didn't know if I'd find my dream job, but I knew there would be jobs. I wasn't stressed that I wouldn't find a job with decent pay.
Right.
And, you know, today they're like, oh my God, am I even going to find a job? Mm-hmm. And where? And what is my commute going to look like? What's my pay? Will I even get benefits?
Yeah.
You know, it's a whole different world. So it's really stressful for most students. I've noticed in the 10 years of teaching at Montclair, the students aren't having as much fun. Like, I loved going to college.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a lot of work. Don't get me wrong. But it was so much fun. And they'll just be like, I don't have time to have fun. I have to work two jobs. I have so much school. I have to do an internship just to get into grad school.
Yeah. I think some of that is societal pressure and personal pressure and parental pressure. So, I mean, you've got to manage all these pressures, right? And figure out. But I think the job market's changing, right? You got to be more of an entrepreneur and figure it out and go after things.
Yes.
So I think, you know, you've just got to, it's a different mindset. And there's so much focus on academic success, which doesn't parlay into critical life skills and job skills that, and so I think there's too much emphasis on, yes, you have to go to grad school, but I don't think you do. So, but it just depends. And I'm not hiring or not hiring, you know, I'm not a hiring manager. So maybe that's different in the real world out there. But my whole thing again with this show and is encouraging people to volunteer, because you gain skills, whether you're helping somebody with a website or doing their books or meeting people or being out in the community. So I think it's one of the ways that you can build those critical life skills by engaging and doing some good for others, which feels good and develops a lifelong habit of helping others. So I think we were going to talk about a little bit about how volunteering cultivates happiness and encourages community and socialization from your perspective and your experience.
Sure. So, I mean, volunteering is just a win-win on every avenue down the road on that. So you want to think about with volunteering is what we know is one of the happiness habits is paying it forward, random acts of kindness. You know, every time we do a random act of kindness, we get a boost of happiness that lasts 24 to 72 hours. So the person giving the random act of kindness, paying it forward, will feel it. The person you do it for actually gets the same boost of happiness. So it's a win-win. Both parties are feeling really good about it. And one of the things about happiness is if we're having a bad day, you know, if we're in a bad mood and we want to switch that mood, there's two ways to really, you know, kind of change your mood pretty quickly. First one is music. And again, that has to be something you love. If you're not a music person, that's not going to work for you. And it has to be a happy song. I know that sounds funny, but I've had clients listen to really sad songs. I'm like, that's not going to work, you know.
Okay.
But you really need to, you know, listen to music that lifts you up, that makes you happy. That can shift your mood instantly. Another way that shifts your mood instantly is to really take a few minutes, go back in time and remember a really great memory or experience. And we get so many great memories and experiences from volunteering, from meeting new people, for giving back. It could be with animals. It doesn't even have to be people. It's whatever you enjoy. Mm-hmm. There is no right or wrong in volunteering. It's doing what works for you.
Right.
But just by giving back and meeting new people and spending time with the animals, whatever you choose to do, we create new memories and experiences. So when you're having a bad day, if you take a few minutes and just close your eyes and really visualize being back at that space, you know, whether it was a party, a wedding, a volunteer day, whatever it is, when you visualize it, you actually go back to that memory. And your brain can't tell the difference if it's happening now or 20 years ago. So by doing more volunteering, meeting new people, putting yourself in situations and places that bring you happiness, you can go back to it at any given time and use it as a way to cultivate happiness and switch your mood pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. So the more memories and experiences we get, the happier we are. And the only thing is, you know, with random acts of kindness, they have to be done with genuineness. Mm-hmm. You have to want to do them. Mm-hmm. It's not about the pat on your back or getting a response back. You're doing because you genuinely want to.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what's important about it. I have my clients, my students. I have to get back in school mode because going back to teach in a week.
Yeah.
I have my students every semester do an assignment. It's the pay it forward assignment. So for 5 days, all they have to do is two random acts of kindness. One is for a friend, a family, somebody they know. The other is for a complete stranger. And all they have to do is write about it. They have to keep a journal about it. And then at the end, just write like a 2 to 3 page critical analysis of how it made them feel. And in the beginning, when I first tell them this assignment, they're like, oh, I got to be nice to people for 5 days.
I don't have time to be nice.
Right. And these are your psych students, so don't get a little nervous out there. But at the end of their experience of just doing nice things for 5 days in a row for 2 people a day, and again, it doesn't have to cost money. It could be as simple as a smile, holding the door open, asking somebody how they are, sending a friend or family member a text just saying, I love you, thank you for being there. I mean, we're not including money because I have to say my college students don't have money. So it's not about that. It's just about kindness and giving out gifts of kindness. And after the 5 days when they write their assignment, in my 10 years, I think I've had less than 5 people who did not like the assignment. Everybody felt such a wave of happiness, pride, you know, all those positive emotions, kindness, gratitude, closer, you know, felt closer in relationships. It really does so much for us. So, you know, what you choose to volunteer doing, you know, with your time is up to you. Again, never have a wrong or right on it. It's just what works for you. But if you can do that, if you can spend some time doing random acts of kindness, it'll make such a difference in your life and everybody around you. Because the other thing is, it'll cultivate happiness for you, and moods and emotions are contagious. So every time you volunteer and you come home and you're in a really great mood and you have those high spirits, you affect your family, your friends, whoever is, you know, around you, and you will give that good vibe. So it really is important to do it. So if you can get out there and help others, I mean, we all can. So let's say you can't even volunteer. Let's just go down the road and you go, I have no time, which I don't think is true. But let's say you do that.
You have time for what you make time for. Right. That's what I always say. Yeah.
Absolutely. But if you don't, then there really is no reason that you just can't do random acts of kindness every day and just show your kindness through, again, whether it's a text. I mean, it takes, what, 20 seconds to write a text and say to a friend, just want to tell you I appreciate thinking of you and love you. 20 seconds to give a compliment, one of the biggest ways to do a random act of kindness. One of the positive psychology exercises we have people do is just to smile at 10 strangers a day. You might be the only person who smiles at them. And every time you smile, it produces endorphins, that happy chemical. So it makes you feel good as well as the other person. So, I mean, there is no excuse. We have so many ways of doing it, but just get out there and do it. And that's why Nicole has this wonderful show to make sure everybody's out there doing random acts of kindness. But it really does a lot for everybody.
Absolutely. And if you want to see Diane's smiling face on Facebook, we finally got it working. So we are on Facebook Live right now at Happy to Help or at Happy Hunterdon on Facebook. So check us out on Facebook, and this will be available. Audio will be available on her website after today at dlcounseling.com. The other magic number we talked about percentage. You have 40% of your well-being or your life is nurture, and you can change that, right? So through tunneling time travel in your mind to a positive memory or anything you can do right now to shift your mood. But also, you have talked about before the magic number of annual income for happiness, optimal happiness. So before you get $150,000 in debt, think about, you want to give us the magic number on how much money you need to be happy according to scientists and statistics.
Well, again, this is only for the New York City tri-state area. I don't know what you need in like Alabama to be
well, probably
happy.
Less, right? Less.
I would think so. Yeah. But they say generally, if you're making about $75,000 a year, and it just went up, it just went up to $75,000, your basic needs are covered. And here in the New York City area, it's you know, definitely more expensive. And there are certain areas that would be a little cheaper, obviously, to live in. But if you have that, then your basic needs are met, then happiness is really not focused on money. You know, if you're making $20,000 a year and it comes to, you know, do I need to pay my electric bill or food on the table? Yes, money will make a big difference in your happiness levels. But if I'm making $75,000 or making $150,000 or making $5 million, happiness only goes up by about 5%. So really, you know, again, if you want to use money for happiness, we're not saying don't use it for material things or buying gifts or anything like that. Just know it does a short-term boost. You know, so we were just talking about it. I just bought a car. And, you know, it's exciting, it's fun, and it'll give me a boost of happiness, that short-term, for a few weeks to a few months. And then I'll be what we call the hedonic treadmill. A few weeks, a few months from now, I'll go, okay, well, this car is great, but what's next? You know, you're always constantly looking for something. Or, you know, I got the earrings, but where's the matching ring or a necklace? We're always looking for what's next. For long-term happiness, it's taking the money and either using it for like a vacation or a party where you create memories and experiences, or you're using the money, as we were talking about, like random acts of kindness, whether it's for charity or giving to friends and family. So you really, the money part, you know, we always ask people what, you know, brings you happiness. How do you define it? You hear a lot of times money, success. And the truth is, they're really not that big of a factor. The number one factor of happiness is socialization. That is really important, which you can get a great deal of community and socialization through volunteering, but also through families, friends, different groups, schools, work, you know. That is so important. So just think of it, you know, when you're thinking about what's going to cultivate happiness, make sure you have that socialization, which involves community, which involves having fun, and also having a support system. Mm-hmm. You know, we can't heal, grieve, forgive. We can't work through things without a support system. And it doesn't have to be this huge one. You know, we always used to have this, you have to have like 20 million friends. You know, that's in your 20s. For most of us, as we get older, if we just have, you know, a small group of people who love us and we love unconditionally, that's the key word, unconditionally, then we're pretty good. We just need that support system where our emotional needs are met. So that's all part of socialization. So you need that community, the fun, which especially now that it's the end of the summer, everybody go out, especially now that Nicole gave us the weather for the whole week.
Go to the beach.
Right. And make sure you have a strong support system. They're really important.
Right. And I think sense of community has kind of fallen away in society. We've become secular. We've got in the pursuit of, for success. And a lot of people have gone away from the church. The church used to provide community, regardless right. of what religion you were part of. The church was a big part of the community. And people are going away from that. But the other thing that there was an article in the New York Times, I think this Sunday, about the whole college experience. And they're saying kids are studying so hard because they want to get the good grades, but they aren't experiencing college because they're so right. focused on, I need to get good grades. I need to get out. I need to go to grad school. I need to get a good job. But they're saying that, you know, like when we went to college, we were meeting different people, having mm-hmm. coffee, having conversations. And they said even make time to get to know your professors, you yeah. know, and spend time with them and, you know, not just out of class. You know, I'm telling my daughter who's in college right now, I said, just enjoy the experience. Don't freak out about your major and what you're going to do. And I mean, I right. know that's the ultimate goal is to get a job and get on with your life. But if you focus solely on that, you're going to miss 4 years or 5 years or whatever.
No, it's true. And that's what we're talking about in the quarter life crisis. As I was saying, in 10 years, I've watched students go from enjoying college to not even experience it at all because mm-hmm. they're so worried and concerned about paying the bills, having two jobs, you know, to really afford it, the bills they're going to have to pay, the debt, trying to get into grad school. And, you know, back in the day, you didn't really need an internship to get into undergrad. Now you're seeing even high school students, you know, they have to have an internship. They need, you know, teaching assistant jobs. I mean, they're trying so hard to even just get into undergrad and graduate. It's such, you know, it's such a different experience and they're not enjoying it. So we really do. We need to have those college students to enjoy the experience. I'm always like, go out and have fun. They're mm-hmm. like, I don't have time. I'm like, make time.
Yes.
Because it's so important to do. And, you know, right on college campus, if you're dorming, you have the whole community. You know, the food's there. Mm-hmm. The gym is mm-hmm. there. The classes are there. The dorms. You have the whole community. And it's also, you know, getting much harder for community because as you know, you were mentioning all the other ones. The other part is most of us are moving so far away from each other. You know, families used to stay so close together.
True.
You know, for me, my older sister is so much older than me, and she moved to Japan when I was 3. I don't even know her. Like, she's an acquaintance to me. Mm-hmm. And this is normal. You know, when we look at a lot of families, you know, one's in Hawaii, one's in California, one's in New York, mm-hmm. one's in Georgia, mm-hmm. and no one's even near each other to have that experience. The same with church or temple. We're not doing that. But, you know, there's also the spiritual avenue, too, as well. So you can get community even if you're part of a spiritual community, whether it's yoga or mm-hmm. Reiki or, you know, just a group where they have discussions. You still can get it. So it's just, you know, finding the way, just like volunteering, what appeals to you mm-hmm. and going out there. You know, I guess that's what meetups are really. I haven't used them, but I have a lot of clients who do. Great way to find other people interested in what you're doing, whether it's hiking, spiritual, book clubs. You know, it's really just getting out there and forming your own community just like it is forming your own jobs.
Right. Get off the couch, so I say. Get off the couch and volunteer or find your group. So we talked about the quarter life crisis and the kids and the college. The other thing, one of the workshops you give is the second half, the transition. And I think there's a lot of moms out there. So one of the books she wrote was going back to work after becoming a mom. You've written 3 books, correct?
Yeah, that was my first book, Baby Steps, The Path from Motherhood to Career. Because that's where I was. Like all my books seem to follow where I am in my
perfect.
Life.
Right. So you're a relevant, you know, you're commenting on a relevant subject that you've experienced. So that's perfect. So she's got 3 books. You can check her website. dlcounseling.com. But also, so I wanted to go back to this transition because there's a lot of middle-aged moms, middle-aged parents, middle-aged people that are trying to, and even in the workforce, trying to second career.
Absolutely.
So what does your second half workshop talk about, and what do you tell people?
You know what, midlife is from 40 to 65.
Oh.
And we never realize that it's this big gap. And the biggest question I get from students, clients, is always, what am I going to do when I grow up? And that's always from the 40-plus right. crowd. So it's really, you know, midlife is such a big gap, so everybody's in a different, and they always call it the sandwich generation, because nowadays, you know, usually taking care of kids as well as parents. So there's a lot of stress, because caretaking is one of the most stressful jobs. Mm-hmm. But really, in our 40s and 50s, talking about volunteering, midlife, one of the biggest things we need is to help others. It is really an important piece to our happiness. So, you know, some of the things you want to think about is, you know, how am I giving back? And you could even think of it as a legacy thing. Because, you know, we always talk about legacy. You know, you want to leave a great legacy. But the truth is you want to live it. You don't want to just leave it. You want to live it.
I love that.
So you want to think about right now, what is it that I want to live so I leave? What is it that I want? You know, you could actually write an obituary. And I know people say that sounds depressing.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it really does work. You know, what is it that you would want your news, you know, obituary in the newspaper to say? Or what would you want people to speak about? How do you want to be remembered?
Mm-hmm.
What, you know, what personality traits, what difference did you make in the world?
Mm-hmm.
And it's really important because for this time gap of that midlife, we need to help others and make a difference in the world. And that's why you see a lot of people go from business careers to teaching or social work or counseling because they realize, hey, you know, this money's not as important, or my house is paid off, the kids are in college, I can concentrate on what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's male or female. And that's really important that we start giving back and doing things that really create meaning for us. You know, happiness without meaning is like a shallow happiness. You know, you could have great socialization, you could be giving back and volunteering and have physical health, but if you don't have something that brings you a sense of meaning and purpose in your own life, something you care about strongly, then you're missing something. And that's when people say, oh, I feel stuck or stale. You know, I just, something's missing. And that's usually because you're missing that meaning. And what you like to do in your 20s is not necessarily what you want to do in your 40s and 50s, because we're always changing, growing, and developing. You know, you don't have to hold on to, well, I went for school for this, or I did it for 20 years. That's what I have to do. You don't. And like you were saying before, this is a time of life where we create our own jobs.
Mm-hmm.
We create our own websites, our own blogs, our own, you know, branding. So you can really do what you want. It's just a matter of figuring out what you want and getting it out there. And one of the number one markets out there is blogging moms. You know, mom
yeah.
bloggers are huge. They're making great money. They're influencing brands. And you can really find them. So we can do whatever we want. And that's the great news. And this is also a me time because, again, our kids are older
mm-hmm.
and we're more involved in what we want. And that's a really important thing because usually, you know, from 20 to 40, it's getting a job, getting a house, getting married, having kids.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere in your 40s and 50s, your kids are, you know, even though some of them are at home, by the 50s, you know, usually most of them are in college or doing their own thing. Or like my daughter, she's in high school. I mean, she needs me, but she doesn't need me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's kind of doing her own thing. So it gives you time to really start thinking about you. And then before the empty nest hits, because for most of us, male or female, you know, we'll go through that empty nest syndrome when all of a sudden everybody's gone, the house is quiet, it's just you and your spouse. And, you know, it's kind of refiguring out the identity of yourself as well as the relationship. You know, that's sometimes another struggle too, because the whole relationship was based on the kids.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, are the kids happy? And what are we doing with the kids and family activities? Now it's just, you know, you two, and it's what do we have in common anymore?
Mm-hmm.
And what do we want to do? And that's a hard part for people. So you have a lot of transitions in midlife. So the workshop really goes over how to deal with change, transitions, and how to transition smoothly and what transition looks like. And then also some tips and tools to being happier and what midlife is about, like we talked about volunteering and helping people, because that is a really big, important thing in our lives now. So it's perfect that you're hitting this market.
Yeah, no, I love it. Well, the other thing I want to go back to, you mentioned the mom bloggers are hot right now, and we were talking about parenting, and another one of your workshops is the positive parent.
Right.
Because as you were saying with it, when people get to transition, they've funneled all of their energy, I think sometimes to the detriment of kids, you know, some
right.
of these helicopter parents funneled all their energy and angst into making their children successful, and that's not good for anyone.
Right.
So do you cover that in your positive parent workshop, or how does that, what's the focus there?
So positive parenting is really about the parent, not the child. So that's the one thing. You know, when a lot of people go to parenting workshops, they think it's really about how to change the child. This one is not.
Good.
This is about really...
We need it.
Yeah, it's really about changing the parent. Because what we know is when a parent or the parents are happy, the kids are happy. Because kids from birth till puberty, which, you know, is a wide range now. We've seen puberty as early as, God, 9, 10.
Mm.
So from birth till puberty, let's say, you know, the two-year process, anywhere from 12 to 14 or a little younger, kids learn through role modeling, observation, and imitation. So it's really about the parent. It's how the parent acts, what their attitude is, what their non-facial, you know, like their non-verbal, sorry. So, you know, they're rolling their eyes, their facial gestures, no eye contact.
And the energy, too. Just the, and yes. You can feel it, right? Okay, sorry, go ahead, keep going.
No, you're completely right. And that's why we talk about, you know, positive psychology is the branch, and then it kind of goes down. You have positive parenting, you have positive aging, you have positive education in the schools. And it's really important that the parents are happy, because if they're not happy, that's what kids see. That's what they'll imitate. So if you go home and you're not happy and you're in bad moods all the time because you're just a negative person, you don't like your job, you're not making the changes you need, or you've been holding on to anger and fear forever, your kids are picking up on it. They're picking up and they're imitating that behavior. It's becoming part of who they are. So the happier you are, the better off your kids are. You know, I always say to moms, because moms especially always feel selfish when they do things for themselves.
I don't.
Well, good. You should never. And the reason why is this. You can't give what you don't have.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're not healthy emotionally, physically, spiritually, you can't give it. And then you can reach burnout, and then you're not there for anybody. So it's so important to put yourself as a priority. Your happiness should be a priority, because the happier you are, the happier your kids are. The more you promote happiness and activities that promote happiness, the whole family's happier, because again, moods and emotions are completely contagious. So it's really important that parents know this. So instead of trying to change the kids, it's about changing our own behaviors, our attitudes, our nonverbals, and really making the point to be conscious. It's like conscious parenting, mm-hmm. being aware. So, you know, whether it's meditation, reading a book, going out with a friend, really take care of yourself. You know, whatever it looks like for you, self-care. Because self-care is so different. I hate when we think of self-care, it's like, oh, just go to a retreat and get a massage. Mm-hmm. That's not for everybody.
Right.
Everybody has different ways to reboot. But we all need to reboot and take little mini pauses during the day where we can just breathe or go in nature or, you know, just relax for a few minutes. We all need that, and then we all need self-care activities that really cultivate happiness and make ourselves, you know, a priority on our own list.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll make us better parents and people.
Yeah, I was at a seminar in Philadelphia a couple weeks ago, and it was for PhDs and universities and teachers and things like professors. And I was telling them, because I was kind of the odd person out there, but it was about global service learning and volunteers and high school volunteers and college volunteers and global volunteers. And they said, well, you know what? They didn't say, why are you here? But they loved my perspective. But I said, yeah, most moms go get a massage. I go to the global service learning retreat for my excitement, you know, so it was really fun.
Right. It's finding what works for you. You know, one of the biggest questions I have my clients do is ask themselves, how do they define happiness? It's really important because happiness is so individual. It's so different for everybody. So it's asking yourself, really thinking, how do I define happiness? What does it look like? What does it feel like? What would an ideal but realistic day look like for me? And then really, when you make that list of, you know, the few things that bring you happiness, like the top five things that make you happy, then make sure that list matches your life.
Mm-hmm.
That's the other important part. You know, if you finally get that list of, you know, these five or six things really cultivate happiness for me, but then you look at it and go, well, I haven't done any of them for years, then you know what's going on. You know, mm-hmm. Your life is not balanced with what you need.
Mm-hmm.
So really, you know, take some time to sit and think, because you know what I've noticed for parents especially, it's hard for them to define happiness. They're so busy making sure everybody else is happy, their kids, their spouse, their parents, their boss, that they forget what makes them happy. So that may take you longer than you think. You know, when I give that homework to clients, I'm like, I want you to write down like a list of 5 to 10 things that cultivate happiness. Sometimes they come back 2 weeks later and they're like, I struggled. It's a tough list, but we really need to do that. We need to define happiness, because that list is also the things that give you self-care and make you a priority. So it's really important to do it.
Would some of that come out maybe if you journaled? You probably advocate for journaling, right? For some people, for...
I do. Only if you like writing.
Yeah.
You know, it's so different for everybody. You know, writing, free writing, where you can just sit and write every morning is a form of meditation. Mm-hmm. So for a lot of my clients who just don't want to meditate, they don't want to sit, you know, still for 20 minutes, you can write. And that could be, you know, your morning meditation. It's what works for you. Mm-hmm. Is it very therapeutic to write? Yes. Can you learn a lot about yourself and have self-awareness and, you know, find patterns and... all of that in there? You could, but if you hate writing and you're not going to do it, and we're forcing you to do something you don't want to do, it's not going to work. And mm-hmm. for those people, it might be taking a walk. For those people, walking is the best way to cultivate mindfulness and get all their thoughts. And they'll hold the phone with them and, you know, speak into the phone their thoughts. So it's what works for you. But yeah, if you like writing, definitely a great way to get all of that.
Absolutely. And you have is your newsletter weekly? I know I get it, but is it?
Yes.
And you're the one this week was You Are Enough, which I think we can't hear enough, right? We don't hear it enough. And you talk about just telling yourself you're enough or realizing, like you talked about before, how you're sabotaging yourself with your own thoughts, right?
Yeah, our biggest fear is that we're not worthy, that we're not enough, we're not lovable. And I always want to, you know, really emphasize, I'd say probably every few months I put something in a newsletter about that, because that is the biggest issue I hear, especially from women, is that they feel they're not worthy, they're not lovable, they don't deserve it, you know, they can't put themselves first. And the truth is, there's a lot of insecurity in that, a lot of fear in it, and we really need to dive in, because if we don't have that self-worth and that self-love, then we're never going to do any of those happiness techniques or self-care or volunteering, because we just won't think we're worthy of it. And the truth is, we always are. Just being here, just being born, we all have that right to be loved and to be enough. So no matter what you've heard in the past, whether it's parents, a bad relationship, or anything, we are all worthy, but it's reminding ourselves of mm-hmm. it. You know, when you look at kids, then they're playing, you know, they're 4, 5, 6 years old. They're really worthy, right? Mm-hmm. You know, everything's about them, and, you know, they're happy as anything majority of the time. And if they're not, it's usually about parents. and that's because they don't even question that. It's somewhere, you know, in late elementary, middle school where we start telling you, you can't wear that. That doesn't look good. Don't say that. That's not good enough. What do you think you're doing? You know, when we start judging mm-hmm. and we start putting all these rules and discipline and opinions, and we don't let people be who they are. Mm-hmm. You know, it really takes away from their self-worth if it's not already taken away from childhood, from, you know, whether it's verbal, physical abuse, or just, you know, being ignored and not being there, whatever it is. It really is, we need to remind ourselves and get back into that. And again, it hits the inner dialogue. You know, what am I saying to myself? What am I hearing?
Yeah, I cut that phrase out of an article I saw or something long ago, and it's on my bulletin board, and it says let go of what others think, you are enough. Mm-hmm. So that's right on that. And we're gonna take a quick break and we'll be back.
Rab Coins of Flemington, New Jersey has been in business for over 40 years. We are highly competitive buyers of gold, silver, and platinum coins, jewelry, and scrap metals, and have recently been named the exclusive gold buyer for Diamond Nation and HealthQuest. We also provide professional appraisals, sales and liquidation services for individuals, law firms, estate trustees, and bank trust departments in New Jersey and Philadelphia. Products and services include gold and silver, American and foreign coins, certified rare date and modern coins, numismatic supplies and books, gold, silver, and platinum bullion, paper currency, United States proof and mint sets, including current issues. From junior collector to the experienced investors, Rabcoin has been for the industry since 1974. Founder and owner Randy Block has been an expert and an active member of the coin industry for over 45 years. Visit us at 56 Main Street in historic downtown Flemington, or call toll-free 1-800-819-9875. The traffic is stuck. Max Living, brought to you by the Max Challenge of Clinton, New Jersey. Join me, your host, Mark LaRose, every Wednesday at 1 p.m. right here on Hunterdon Chamber Radio. I'll be discussing important health and fitness subjects, featuring guests and success stories. We are here to help motivate you. It's a beautiful day.
When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provides sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody out there!
Get in
into it.
Everybody run down.
Get involved.
Everybody, you.
Did you know the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in? Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
And we're back. You're listening to Nicole Smith. This is Happy to Help. And today our guest is Diane Lang. She has books and classes and workshops and all kinds of stuff. She's very intellectual, and you have so many great things. I just can't. I'm just so overwhelmed because I've been, like I said, I've been to your workshops. I learned so much. I was writing furiously, listening attentively, and I learned so much from your workshops. And so we're going to have Diane share some of her tips and tricks and happiness habits to help us become happier people. So throw them at us.
Well, I wanted to give everybody some techniques so they can really cultivate a little bit more happiness in their lives. So one of the first ones, you know, we talked about random acts of kindness, which is one of the happiness habits. So again, get out there and help as many people as you can, even if it's just smiling at 10 people a day. If that's all you do, that's great, but get out there and do that today, especially with the sun. So we can take a nice walk and smile at 10 people. The other one is gratitude. And, you know, we always talk about gratitude. It's so popular, but it's such an important tool because gratitude does a few things. So gratitude cultivates happiness, but it also cultivates mindfulness. And the other thing about gratitude, it's one of the most effective tools we have to retrain your brain to go from negative to positive. So how I have my clients do it, but you could do it however you want, is at night, right before they're about to go to bed, I have them write or say out loud or say to themselves, because again, if you don't want to write it in a journal, you don't have to. You can still get all the benefits by saying it in your head or saying it out loud. So pick and choose what works for you. But at night, write or say 2 to 3 things that you are grateful for that happened today. And the difference that I do is I want them to just look at their day and pick out the 2 or 3 things that those little gifts or miracles or blessings, whatever you want to call it, that you're really grateful for. Because if we just do gratitude in general, and we start doing it every day, we end up saying things that have no meaning. You know, I'm grateful for my health, or I get, well, I woke up today, or I'm alive, you know, those typicals. And not that you shouldn't be grateful for that, but after a while, it becomes like a gratitude rut. It just doesn't have any value or meaning. So if you could spend a few minutes at night, and it won't change your schedule, take maybe 2 to 5 minutes, to just really think about my day and go, what am I really grateful for? And for me, I'm just grateful I found this building. Also, I'm starting off right there.
I am too.
And I'm grateful that the sun's coming out because if you're in this area, you know, we've had rain for a few days. And that's already, and it's only, you know, not even 11 a.m. and I'm already grateful for those things. You know, some days you might only have one thing, you're homesick, you know, and nothing's going well. And you can only find one thing that it was sunny out or that you didn't have to go to work and you could heal. You know, might be a few things. Other days, you could have 10 things. That's okay. Just make sure you have one thing a day that you really take the time to search through your day and be grateful. Now, remember, when you're starting a habit like random acts of kindness or gratitude, it takes time for it to really become an autopilot habit that it's lifestyle. So, you know, like New Year's resolutions, when you just do something for a few weeks, it doesn't work. You know, that's why they always say the gym's really popular January 1st, but by like January 25th, everybody's gone already. You really need to give it 2.5-3 months. That's the scientific, you know, time amount for most of us to create a new habit. So really give it those 3 months of every day writing it or saying it out loud. I've been doing it for years, and it is one of the most effective tools I have. What it has done for me is it has allowed me to search the day and notice things that I've never paid attention to, the positives, the little things, because that's what gratitude is, the little things. It might have been I just had the best cup of coffee. It might have been that an old friend called me I haven't, you know, talked to in 10 years. It might have just been that I picked a park to walk in and it was beautiful and I saw a dog I've never seen before and it was beautiful. It could be anything. And we don't spend the time really thinking about those little things because, again, we're in subconscious mode and just on the go and in our routine that we don't pay attention. When we start paying attention to the little things, it really makes a shift in our lives. So by doing gratitude every day, you're really shifting what you notice and what you think. And happiness is a perspective. So if you really start noticing the small little things, it'll start cultivating more happiness. Then you do the random acts of kindness and you help others as well as yourself, you're really getting, you know, double the boost. So right there, those are two things. Another one I always want to talk about is walking, because the best way to get mindfulness is through walking. Now remember, mindfulness is being awake and aware of everything around you as well as the thoughts in your head. So it's really being conscious. Meditation is the intentional practice of mindfulness. So you can meditate, but for a lot of us, walking is the best way to get really just where you can really get a sense of peace. You're in your conscious mind. You're in the here and now. All that inner dialogue has floated to the back. You're not putting any attention on it. And you're really in that state of mindfulness. And that reduces stress. And, you know, walking again is so healthy. Now, you know, I'm not saying we're going to get a six-pack off it. I'm not sure how you do that. But every time you walk, you really lower your stress hormone cortisol. So you're getting so much out of it. So I always suggest that every day, if you can walk, it doesn't have to be a speed run or jog, but I always say walking, you can get so much out of it. Now, obviously, if we could do it outside, it's even better because, you know, getting it out in nature, getting the fresh air, the vitamin D from the sun, all of that's so important. But even if you have to do it inside, you know, I have a client who does it right in front of the TV. There's like on demand, has like free exercises, and some people do it to a YouTube video or they do it on the treadmill. If that's what you have to do in the winter, you know, we don't want you outside slipping in the ice over in these areas. Don't do it. But really just try to get a routine of some type of exercise every day, because it'll produce those endorphins, which make us happy. It'll reduce the stress hormone cortisol. So it'll reduce your stress levels and it'll cultivate mindfulness. And that's so important, because that's how we reduce stress naturally with no side effects. So if you can get walking, a great routine. I know for me, if I don't walk at least 5 times a week, I start getting like antsy. Like I get a little moody. Like it's so important to me. And all I do is speed walk, because I like speed walking. I just walk fast. I'm a New Yorker. That's how we are. But again, it's not, you know, I might not be burning so many calories, but for me, it's for mental. And we're talking about mental and emotional health and how important that is. So, you know, if you say, I can't jog, I can't run, you know, my knee, whatever it is, all you need is a nice walk. And it makes a huge difference.
Right, and well, the Fitbit craze is for...
I know, I'm wearing one. I have my Fitbit on, but I didn't do many steps yet, so I don't want to look at it.
That's okay, we won't monitor that for it. But no, I mean, my husband, he got one, I don't know, a decade ago or something, and he hits his 5 miles pretty religiously.
Me too.
Yeah, no, I think that was a perfect marketing tool, whatever, and
it
people
motivates
can try.
You.
Yeah, no,
like,
it's great.
When I wear it, it motivates me to take the steps, to park further away, just to get those, you know, steps in. But if you could do it in a group, like even at lunch, like if you could do like a 15-20 minute, makes a big difference. So try to get those steps in as much as you can.
Break up the day and get a little you time and talk time and just fresh air time. Yeah, no, I think it's important. I mean, I know I have to get my exercise in or I'm a bear.
Yeah.
So but it's hard. Sometimes you have to convince yourself to get up and get off the couch and get moving. But once you do, you're glad you did. It's the after effects that you're going for. So it's definitely worth it. So any last words before we sign off today?
So, well, thank you again for having me. It's been great being here. It goes so fast. And just remember, we do have control over our lives. You know, we can really change our belief systems, our habits, our thoughts, our patterns. We can cultivate more happiness. So wherever you are today, even if you're not feeling as happy as you want to be, remember, you can be happier. And you can start with the gratitude, the random acts of kindness, doing some exercise. And I have more tips on my newsletter, or if you want to go on there, I send out on Mondays. I send out weekly tips and just my workshop schedule. And, you know, if you have any questions, you can email me and I can send it to you as well.
That's great. So it's dlcounseling.com.
Yes.
And you have a Facebook page too?
I do. Okay, it's Creating Balance and Finding Happiness.
How appropriate. It was wonderful having you. I think we'll have to have you again, because we could talk for hours, I think. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
We're learning more about the illegal immigrant accused of murdering 20-year-old Iowa student Molly Tibbetts. Turns out he worked at a farm that was owned in part by the brother of a prominent Republican in Iowa. The Des Moines Register reporting that Christian Rivera worked at Yarraville Farms, which lists Eric Lang as an owner. He's the brother of Craig Lang, a Republican who was president of the Iowa Farm Bureau Federation and a candidate for state agriculture secretary. Rivera now facing a first-degree murder charge for the woman's death. Special Agent Rick Ron says surveillance video showing Rivera's vehicle following Tibbetts as she jogged was a key piece of evidence.
We spent a number of days, several hours reviewing the video, and subsequently were able to identify Rivera's vehicle.
That is heard on NBC, and this is USA Radio News.
Listen to what Chris said about Andro 400.
I've lost almost 40 pounds in 10 weeks. My son was getting married.
84,000 Americans filed first-time jobless claims last week, 14,000 fewer than the previous week's total, and it now continues a two-and-a-half-year string of weekly jobless claims below 300,000. Experts had been expecting 302,000 new claims for unemployment benefits last week because of the impact of Hurricane Harvey. I'm Chris Barnes.
Former White House spokesman Sean Spicer appeared on the Jimmy Kimmel TV show. He spoke about his differences with Anthony Scaramucci and why he stepped down from his position.
I just didn't feel as though he had the qualifications to work in the communications office. My view was is that if I'm going to have to partner with somebody that I don't believe had the skill set to execute the job, then it was incumbent upon me to either step aside or make my voice known.
For more news and a look behind the headlines, join us online at usaradio.com.
It's easy to get the timeless look of hardwood for your home with great flooring deals from Lumber Liquidators. This week, get 10 to 23%.